Today we're talking with Anna Mae Kinney, and the subject today is how social structure has changed in the last 50 years. So welcome, Anna Mae.
Good morning, Maureen.
Yes. So how has social structure changed for us in the last 50 years?
Well, I would really like to go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
In order to understand us humans, we have to understand where we came from. And being that we're animals from the primate family, it's great to know that primates were social animals in the sense of living in little clans and families and groups, okay?
Okay.
And when man broke away from the primates and started, evolving on his own, he was very much like that, with just little family groupings, okay?
Okay.
But after the discovery of fire, that changed everything. Because when man sat down in the evening to warm up, and many times the fire was first built just for warmth, and then they found out they could cook on this fire.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And once they start finding out that warm food sort of stays with you a lot longer when it's cold outside, I think the habit of cooking became very enjoyable. And people gathered together around the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, like every night when somebody built the fire, a group of people, maybe they were very primitive, maybe the language wasn't developed at the time, but according to specialists in primitive humans, if you want to call it, I don't know what it
mm-hmm.
be,
mm-hmm.
they say that man started developing his language when he started gathering around the fire. And they started storytelling and sharing and everything. And first it was the immediate family. Then it would be your extended family. And as man progressed over the centuries, it became the community that would gather.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the purpose of this, to bring this up right now, is the fact that it wasn't just used to tell the stories. It was used like, okay, in the first, things were really rough. So, I mean, life and death were discussed in this community. So, say during the day you were attacked by a big bear. You went to the fire that night. You shared your horrible experience. And somebody else there may have been also attacked years ago, and he will tell you, oh, yeah, this is what happened to me.
It's interesting.
So, I mean, the fact is humans learned to share and to empathize and to give understanding to each other.
Okay.
Now, say you lost a child or you had a very sad occurrence happen to you. You would bring this to the fire and you would meet other women there that had lost children and so on. And this family knit group would be comforting to you and your support group. But the thing is that this support group has been lost as we've gone down the ages.
That's
now,
true.
From the first time that man built fire until probably anywhere from 50 to 75 years ago, the family structure and the extended family structure was highly important to everyone. If you're 50 or older, you probably have memories of huge family gatherings with grandparents, aunts, uncles, and millions of cousins. They would either be there to celebrate the holidays or some occasion, like a wedding, a baptism, or something, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there were these all the time. And now it's broken down to it's rarer and rarer and rarer. People gather for funerals. They gather for weddings. And even at that, there's fewer and fewer that show up.
That's true, but there's smaller families too, I guess.
Uh-huh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we have been encouraged to have smaller families.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody says that's environmental and all this stuff, but we'll talk about that another time. Because the fact is that besides the baby boom, and there are a lot of baby boomers around, and they do present a big part of the population, and their children and so on. Within 50 years, the population of the world is going to decline so drastically that it's going to be unreal,
mm-hmm.
just because of people getting old and dying.
Right.
Nothing else. I mean, we don't need anything added to that. In 50 years ago, you would find 2 and 3 generations of families living under one roof.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did an article in the Record a few years ago about this, the family home.
Right.
And what was shared in that home,
mm-hmm.
and the importance of that home. And now, with the economy like it is today, you're seeing it happening again with a few families.
Right, that's true.
They're starting to have 2 generations living together. Sometimes it's the college children that have graduated returning home because they can't find jobs, they can't afford apartments on their own. And other times, it's the elderly parents that are returning home and leaving the seniors' homes and going back and living with their adult children.
Okay, right.
Very seldom do you see 3 generations like it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot to be said for the 3-generational house.
There is.
Yeah, we were told after World War II that it wasn't healthy for us to allow our children to live at home. I don't know why, but this is what it was hammered into that our parents' generation, that to help our children mature, they needed to get a job immediately after they either got out of high school or college,
mm-hmm.
or university,
mm-hmm.
and be on their own.
Okay.
There's nothing really sound about that, because there's no reason why they can't be adults and have a portion of the house divided up and live on their own. We've learned to teach ourselves not to be able to cope with other adults living in our house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may sound funny, but like you've heard the expression, 2 women in a kitchen don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's for hundreds and hundreds of years. Mothers and grandmothers and granddaughters have shared kitchens and worked out very fine.
Okay, interesting.
And the thing you have there is, at the end of the day, you can sit down. If you have a problem, you have someone that you can relate to. It may not be your mother, but it may be your grandmother.
Right.
And you got somebody you can talk to.
It's so important.
This is the problem in our society today.
Mm-hmm.
There is no one to talk to. Instead of respecting seniors for their wisdom and saying, okay, mom, dad, you can't do much work now, but you can contribute to this or that in the house, or sit and do the mending, or do this or that. They encourage seniors to go in at their own residences and live on their own.
Mm-hmm. True.
And so much is lost by not having them as part of the family.
It's true. There's so much knowledge and stories. And
well, you know, there's a big difference between our society and the Native American society, where the elders are respected for their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And looked up to and consulted, and they lead. And we just do the opposite. We look down to the elders. And we say, okay, you don't have very much worth anymore because you don't go out and hold a 9-to-5 job.
Okay, that's true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, okay. And the thing of putting our children in daycare, what are we doing? We're breaking the family ties. When I grew up, there were a lot of single mothers that had to go out and support themselves. You found them everywhere. I mean, it wasn't that uncommon. I mean, it wasn't as common as it is today, but it wasn't that uncommon either. And what did they do with their children? Someone in the family either volunteered to take care of the child out of love,
mm-hmm.
or the parent hired somebody, like a grandmother, an aunt, an uncle, or whatever it was, and paid them a little bit to take care of the child. But But the child was with somebody who had an interest in the child, someone who wasn't also taking care of 15 other children.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
The child, and you knew what kind of values that child was being taught because you were from the same tribe, or what you want to call it, family.
Yes.
So, I mean, now you're seeing the children being raised by strangers in large groups where they cannot get this individual care.
No.
And how many hours a day? I mean, it's anywhere from 6 to 8 hours a day. These little kids are losing the sense of family, of safety, of being able to knowing that when they get to an age where they can talk, there's that person that they can talk to,
mm-hmm.
that will understand them and care about them.
Mm-hmm.
So we grow up, I mean, the generation that's growing up right now doesn't have that safety net of saying that I have a family around me. Any time of the day, I could go and find a member of that family who relates to me. Because there are a lot of members of that family.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Instead of just having two parents, two kids in a house, and then isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have two parents trying to earn a living to provide what one man could provide in the 1950s, you have a lot of isolation. Because the parents get home, they're tired, they have a lot of work to do, and there's no time.
No time.
That's true. That's the thing, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the only way we could really fix this situation, I see, is by bringing back the two or three generation home. And then, I mean, a lot of grandparents today wouldn't want to stay home and take care of the grandkids. They want a life. They're told that that is their reward for doing everything, to have a life, to travel, to do this or that. Okay, so if that's what they want, they want. But there are a lot of them that wouldn't mind.
Mm-hmm. It's true. That's a lot of them that would like to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, if they have two or three children with different grandchildren, they could have their own little daycare, and they could even be paid a little bit by the children to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So at least they're making a little pocket money, and
yeah,
they're
mm-hmm.
doing something in their spare time.
Mm-hmm.
And still, the children would be raised by people who love and respect them.
Right.
Now, the thing that really gets me is, have you ever studied primates? I mean, if you've ever read any of Jane Goodall's books or any of the other popular books on the market, you'll learn the first thing about primates is that they don't let go of their babies. I mean, they're always clinging to them until they're about 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They're very seldom out of sight. There are some times when mother chimpanzees will share taking care of the kids.
Okay.
So that way they can have a break, like, hey?
Mm-hmm.
But it's these females that share are in the same tribe. They're usually with the same mate.
Okay.
Because they're not one partner. They have many females, hey?
Okay.
So they're in the same little family grouping. And they share their babies and so on. Sometimes chimpanzees can be pretty vicious, just like humans. And they will kill they'll practice infanticide.
Okay.
And they'll kill their own babies, or they'll kill that of the other women. You're going to find mental illness in every species.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it happens. But the thing is, the family grouping is still highly valuable with any primate.
Mm-hmm.
And we being primates, our family grouping is valuable, but it's been eliminated. And so we have to get that structure back if we can get it back.
That's
now,
true.
The thing is, the depression and having a sad day, this happens like when we were talking about the light and the lack of light in the winter.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In our last little discussion. You don't realize the changes in the hormones in the body that happen because of the fact that there's a lack of light. And this can cause people to feel very sad. And when you get this hormonal balance back by going to bed early when it gets dark early and getting up early and having dim lights at night. And it helps you to get the right hormones to respond at the right time of day. And that's one way of helping. But another thing is to learn the differences between blue days, feeling sad, grief, and depression. Depression is the bottom of the scale, or if you want to put top, I don't know, but I say bottom of the scale. It is something you do have to deal with, but it's not as common as a diagnosis as is going around right now. Everything is being diagnosed as depression. And from what I've seen from working on the internet, I've worked with different groups of ladies since 1996 or so, and I've worked with a lot of different ladies that have had all kinds of problems, from bipolar, so on and so forth. And there's all kinds of depression. But there's also many, many, many lower forms of problems before you even get to that. And these type of problems, like a blue day, you just get up in the morning and you feel sad, but you don't know why you're sad.
Right.
Maybe it was something somebody said to you yesterday that you didn't deal with.
Okay.
I mean, you just brushed it off and you just put it in the back and you didn't bother dealing with it. Everybody has that happen. Or maybe you heard of a friend being sick, or somebody passed away that you know, a distant person.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're feeling grief from actual physical loss of somebody you love and care for. That could be grief of a broken relationship. Everybody goes through that at some time. Even young people in their teens through that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to learn to deal with that grief. And it's not necessarily depression. It's a normal function of our human psyche to feel sadness, to feel joy. If we wake up in the morning, the sun is shining, and we're happy, and we feel so joyful we can't stop talking, and we chatter and chatter and want to call friends and everything, do we think there's something wrong with us? No. We say we're having a good day.
Mm-hmm. True. Mm-hmm.
And then when we have something sad happen, we all of a sudden clam up, we keep to ourselves, and we say we're having a bad day because there must be something wrong with us. We start thinking right away in the lines that there's something wrong with us because we can't get happy. Our society has to start realizing that it is okay to have a bad day. It is okay to be sad. It is okay to cry over something. It's okay to feel anger, too. I mean, as long as you don't go to extremes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, to have those feelings and have those emotions only reflects that we're human. I had a woman I talked to recently. Well, in fact, I've had a few of them over the last couple of years, but this one in particular had lost her husband. And for the first couple of weeks, she was pretty sad.
Right.
She was going through the steps of grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And grieving can take, anywhere from 6 months to a couple of years. Because there's a series of emotions that you have to deal with. And she wasn't even 2 weeks, and she was hearing from her friends telling her, "Oh, I was there. I know what you're talking about. When I lost my husband, I'm so glad I got on this pill or that pill. And I didn't have to deal with it anymore because it took it all away from me."
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What it did was numb all the senses, numb all the feelings, and she never learned how to deal with it.
True.
But that's what seems to be the out for most people. I mean, they're encouraged by society. Okay, your husband died. You should be over it by now. Or your wife died. Or what are you going on about? I mean, that's too long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We have forgotten how to share, how to be there to listen. And when I was 16, I was reading a magazine, just one of those women's magazines that, you know, comes in the house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there was an article there about listening and the art of listening. And I think, actually, that might have really spurred my interest in psychology more than just about anything, because it got me to my library, and it got me to read a lot of books. And the art of listening is almost non-existent anymore. People just do not listen. I could write a book about things that I have talked to people about, and 15 minutes later, they hadn't remembered even half of it, because people did not maintain the art of listening like they used to.
And it's so important, too.
Yeah, it's really important. And I think they lost it because we used to have an oral history where we used to sit around the fire, like I mentioned before, mm-hmm. and tell stories. And these stories were memorized by the people who listened, so they could pass them around and tell them to other people.
That's true.
And that was their form of entertainment and sharing. They didn't have news media. They didn't have television. They didn't have radio. It was only this shared knowledge that was passed on from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we learned how to fight bears off, and how we learned to make fire, and how we learned to cook, and everything else. It was all oral history. I mean, nobody had written history at all. Nobody could write down a recipe. They had to show you how to make something and tell you how to make it, and then you showed your daughter or your son or whoever, and so on.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And this is also how people learned to listen, because if they didn't listen right, they knew they wouldn't get the story right. And it could, in some cases, like if it was a hunting story or a survival story, could mean their life.
It could, yeah. That's so true.
Today, listening is almost like email. When you used to write a letter, you used to take time and really try to get a message across in that letter.
Mm-hmm. True.
Because you were going to fold it in up, and you were going to put it in an envelope, you were going to address it, and you were going to post it with a stamp on it. And you knew that it wasn't going to get to the other person for 5 or 6 days or whatever,
right.
depending on
mm-hmm.
how the post went.
True.
And you knew that when that person read that letter, you wanted to convey a message that you couldn't respond to maybe for another month. Now with email being so fast, people just jot down anything and they send it
mm-hmm.
without
That's
even
true.
A thought.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes getting themselves in a lot of trouble, too, along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. Really, I mean, have you ever sent an email to anyone where you've put so much nice detail in it, and then they come back and they've misquoted the whole thing?
Don't really recall, but I'm sure I have many times, probably.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
many times, because they don't actually read it all. They
That's
scan
true.
It.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we're losing. We have to learn to listen again and get this back into us where we help each other. I mean, there's all kinds of losses that we have through life. And, you know, to say that we should shake it off and be ready to go in a month or a week, it depends on the person.
It does. Sometimes it can take a long time.
Yeah, you have to pay attention to your feelings. Sometimes you may not even understand your feelings if you had a loss.
Mm-hmm.
You may have contradictory feelings. Like if you had a spouse who was long-time suffering and dying from a terminal illness, there might be a sense of relief that that person is gone. Not in the sense that you're happy that he's gone, but in the sense that you didn't want to see him suffer anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you're sort of feeling like, well, I shouldn't have this feeling of relief. And you're starting to blame yourself and all this other thing. But having another person who's gone through that and being able to talk and share those experiences is the only way we can do it.
That's true. That's so true. That would be so helpful.
When I started studying psychology way in the 1960s, The common practice was you went to a therapist, a psychologist, that is, or a psychiatrist, whichever the case may be, and you talked out your problem, and you got professional input.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly you talked, and by talking, you solved your own problems.
Yeah, that's true. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but I'd say not too slowly, but slowly, over the last 25 years, the profession has gone away from the talking couch and into the prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying they don't listen to you at all. I wouldn't know that, but the thing is that most people are sedated or taking some drug or another instead of talking. And I think a lot of these problems, except maybe for severe, deep depression that does need professional help immediately, most of the things can be talked out before they got that bad.
Mm-hmm.
They get that bad because we don't deal with them.
That's true. That's right.
Yeah. And our communities are failing us. Our societies are failing us. Some of the most vulnerable people to suicide and depression are our seniors. Well, first of all, seniors, what do they have left? Their families are gone. Their families are grown up. They're out on their own. These are expressions that refer to isolation.
Mm-hmm.
My family's gone. My family's grown. They're on their own. That means they don't need me anymore. That's what it all implies.
Mm-hmm. Or they're so far away, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're scattered all over the universe. I mean, we're all over the world, not universe, but pretty soon it might be all over the universe. We're scattered everywhere. And we don't have that tight community anymore. And a lot of younger people, if they're listening right now, get out there. Find a senior, set them up with a computer, get them into a community. Get them active. Because that could save a senior's life.
It could. It makes a big difference.
Yes, because a lot of them don't want to try this new thing. Because, I mean, let's face it, it's not easy sometimes when you're over 60 to start something new, like learning how to get on a computer.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of failure, too. Yeah.
Well, everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you don't have somebody there to support you.
That's right.
And it's just so sad. And, you know, we think our teens are safe. I mean, we looked at the teens, but they're a special group. They have a lot of friends, but these kids have grown up without the family structure. So what that means is they didn't grow up like I did or maybe you did. With having an aunt in the background or a few cousins here or there that I could go to and talk to. They grew up having a counselor at school, maybe, going to daycare when they were young, being able to talk to their parents at night, and, you know, just being a teenager and just being a young adolescent is so hard. People forget how hard it is when they get older. The sudden changes, the relationships, and being able to handle the new relationships and everything. Everything's new and different, and it's all learning, hey?
That's right. It's true.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, just understanding that teens need structure and family could save a lot of our kids, because the two highest suicide age groups are the elders and the senior, the teenagers.
Okay, the elders and the teenagers.
Yep, mm-hmm. Because they're the most isolated. You got there. I mean, the kids are coming home. There's nobody at home. There's no parent or anything home. Everybody's working.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no one to talk to. And they've not grown up like we did, where if you did have a problem, you discussed it with somebody at home.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because where's that grandmother, where's that uncle, where's that cousin? They're not at the family gathering. They're not there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it just makes such sense that these would be the two highest groups. And then, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of loss, and there's divorce, and a lot of that in our society, where kids are in one-parent families, or they shift back and forth from home to home.
That's true. There is a lot of that.
And, yeah, and that's something that people grieve about, too, because kids lose a parent. Sometimes they feel like they've caused it, which is the worst thing that can happen to a child, to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Because parents haven't learned how to explain to them that they didn't cause it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they're so unaware. They don't know that their teen feels this way. It's all lack of communication.
It is. It's so important. Communication is so important.
Yeah. And when you have a loss, any loss, it could be a pet. I mean, people underestimate the value of an animal companion. And when we get into our animal companion show later on, maybe before Christmas if you want,
mm-hmm.
I'll go into more of that about grieving for a pet. Because it is so important that even if we don't understand someone else's loss, we understand that they are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
We may not understand the importance of... We probably could relate better to, say, a man loses his wife or a woman loses her husband. We could understand their type of loss. But when someone is alone and depends on the companionship of an animal for that love and affection,
mm-hmm.
it's sometimes hard for a person who has not had that kind of relationship to understand the bonds that have been broken.
It's
and
true.
How mm-hmm. devastating that kind of loss can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like any other loss. You have to go through the same types of steps, and depending on who you are and how you talk about it, if you close yourself up on any loss and don't talk about it, it will take you longer to get over it.
That makes sense.
So mm-hmm. the more you talk about it, I mean, it doesn't mean you have to say, boo, boo, I'm sad, and cry. You can say, well, I was thinking about my husband today and remembering our wedding and how we did this and that. And share little good things or share sad things. And just talk about the loss and how you feel.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And that's the same for a pet lover. They need a person who has also gone through this to share the mutual feelings. Now, have you lost any pets you felt that way about, Maureen?
Oh, yes. I understand exactly what you're saying, but I think that people, you know, have to be the type of people that have pets or something, or, you know, to understand that.
Yeah, and, you know, the feelings of loss and sadness can be very deep and very dark. Especially when you've lost somebody that's very close to you. And it can take a long time to get over. But the difference between that and clinical depression is that when you're really depressed to the point where you can't function in your daily activities,
mm-hmm.
then you really need professional help. If you can't... get yourself out of it enough and you see that you can't hold down a job or do your normal daily things or the emotions are too strong, then's the time you need it, that professional help. But even if you go for that professional help, for me it would be talking first,
mm-hmm.
finding somebody to listen. But a lot of people won't go to a doctor and talk because they say, I've had people tell me this, if I have to pay somebody to listen to me, if I have to pay somebody to listen to me, I know they really don't care. So I don't really want to talk to them.
Okay. I've never heard of that one, but okay. Yeah, I can understand that, yeah.
Oh, I've had quite a few people say that.
Okay.
That you know, if you have to go and pay somebody, then it's his job, and he doesn't really care.
Okay.
I mean, I think the psychiatrist does care. I think the psychologist does care. But to some people... it may not be a big percentage of them, But a lot of times it's the older generation, they feel that way.
Mm-hmm. True. The older generation's a little bit different. It's true.
Yeah. A lot of people feel that way. And some people growing up today feel that way, too. Because we need to, we feel that if somebody listens to you, they care. That thought is always there. That when a person really listens, they really care. I'm a good listener. And I started that, like I told you, when I was about 16. And it's funny what a difference it makes in your life when you really care and really listen.
Mm-hmm. It does make a big difference, yeah.
Well, people really know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they really appreciate it.
I found that
most of my life that they did. And it also helps you because when you listen, you get the details that you really need in life.
That's true, you do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt to take notes. I mean, I've listened to dear friends who have had very bad depression and needed to talk, and I've taken a pad and I've noted down a few things that they've said. So that way, when they come back, I would be able to be there. And I would understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, everybody wants to be remembered. And they want what they say remembered. And if something like their birth date or something, at first you might not remember a person's birth date when you first hear it. But if you write it down a couple of times, you're going to remember it.
True. Mm-hmm.
And by remembering somebody's birth date, it's not such a big deal, but it does make people feel important because they need this. Everybody needs to feel they're important to somebody.
Yep, they do. That's definitely a must of humans.
Well, now that I've taken this all around in
mm-hmm.
a circle,
mm-hmm.
we're getting to the real point of it. This social situation that we've lost over the last 50 years is that we've taken people and made them feel unimportant. By losing the family structure and having someone there to talk to all the time gave us a sense of importance. Maybe it was a false sense, I don't know, but I think it really helped us to cope with the little problems that everyday life gave us.
I'm sure it did.
And I think until we can return to, I'm not saying everybody has to live multi-generational, but at least open the door and socialize with your own families and put some importance on family gatherings and community and relating to each other and being there to help one another and listening. If everybody could just get a couple of books from their library on the value of listening and try to be the best listener, not the best talker, but the best listener they could be, this whole world would be different.
A very important factor.
Yeah. I'm not saying it would cure all mental illness. I mean, there is some people that are really have problems and do need lots of help, and there's a good percentage of people that really do need professional help. But there's a lot of people that would never get to that point if they learned how to cope and how to handle minor sad days, blue days, and grief.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think our part could be a lot bigger in this role in stopping the epidemic of suicide by being there to listen and comfort.
It makes a huge difference to the person who's in trouble.
Well, also, you know, if you listen to a teenager, if you really listen to somebody, an elder or a teenager, and they have a problem and they want to discuss it, and you share something of your own with them, you're making a bond. And you're showing them that there's no harm in talking about it. And then that person may be more inclined to open up to a professional when they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And you might, I mean, when they really need it, they might not do it if they have a fear of rejection or a fear of criticism. So by accepting their problem and accepting their whatever they have to tell you in a non-judgmental way, and just letting them talk, you might encourage them to get the professional help they need.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It could make a big difference.
The reason why I wanted to talk about this right now is because we're coming on the worst season. It's the Christmas holiday. That's right. It's not just a Christian holiday, because a lot of these different religions have their holidays all around the same period of time, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And no matter which society you come from and which culture you've grown up in, this time of the year is pretty hard. And we all have childhood memories. We all have things we'd want to forget. We have things we want to repeat. We want things we cherish. There's all kinds of memories that go up and down in our body. And we do give us highs, give us lows. And we need to talk sometimes. And this is a good time to be a good listener.
That's so true. Christmas is a very difficult time for a lot of people.
I think there's no one on this earth after they're over 50 that hasn't suffered loss around this time of year, that hasn't suffered some kind of loss where the memory comes alive. And also, when we go through the loss of a loved one, our faith may be tested for the first time. I mean, life after death, what we think about life, what we feel about God, what we think about ourselves, facing the fact that one day we're going to die finally. I mean, we get to the point where we realize that. You know, I mean, this isn't forever.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to deal with our own life. And these are the things we start thinking about and we have to face and we need to talk about.
It's so important.
Yeah. So that's about it for today, but I just hope that if you're in a position where you're depressed, find somebody to talk about. Don't be afraid to talk. I mean, if the person is a friend, they will listen without judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't listen, then they're not a friend. That's the way I see it.
True.
And you can always, there's somebody out there that cares, and just find that person and share what you need to share. And if you haven't got family and you haven't got anybody to talk to, then it's time to find a professional that will listen and care.
Okay, so true, so well said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I just want to see, our rate of suicide go down and our happiness level go up if possible.
Yeah, I guess we'd all like to see that, and what we have to do is start being there and be a good listener for people too.
Yeah, well, you know, it just takes a little bit of time. It doesn't really take a lot.
No.
It just takes a little bit of caring. Instead of worrying about what you're going to say next in a conversation, think about what the person is actually saying.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
That makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. And I like your idea, too, about taking notes.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to take a note.
No.
And if you're on a computer, make a file. Make a file on your computer and title it after the person's name and have their phone number and address in there and have a few notes. When his birthday is, when his wedding anniversary is, when his kids' birthdays are. I mean, it would help you.
It would, yeah. It would help them a lot, too, and it helps us, too.
Yeah, because we need all to feel that we're important and we're too busy with trivia. I mean, how many people get jokes on their computer that they send to everybody they know and spend all their days playing computer games and Facebook things? Oh, forget it. Anyway, there's so many different things there that you can play around with and waste your time on.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather spend an hour helping somebody.
Yeah, that's where the importance really lies.
You know, I've had many people tell me I waste my time. I don't think a minute's wasted. Even if you don't ever see that person again, if you've touched their heart and made them feel good about themselves, you have done something.
That's very important. That's very true.
I mean, even if you just give somebody a smile and a good day, and if you see a tear in their eye, you can put your hand on their shoulder. If they hit the kind, you can put your hand on their shoulder. But anyway, stand there and ask them, is there something I can do? Are you okay? Are you having a bad day? Do you want to talk?
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised how many people want to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a matter of reaching out to people.
I was in the grocery aisle one day, and there was a lady there that must have been about 70. And she was trying to reach a can, for a can. She couldn't reach. She was shorter than I am, and I'm short enough. And anyway, I reached and got it for her, and she was very thankful. And then I saw that she was just about to burst into tears, and I said to her, I says, are you having a difficult day? And you wouldn't believe how this woman opened up.
Really?
I mean, just opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I was done, she had the biggest smile you ever saw on her face.
That's wonderful. That's certainly a great moment for you, too.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but those miracles are out there. I mean, take the time. I mean, we're all in too much of a hurry, living our lives, doing our thing, instead of taking our time.
Mm-hmm. So well said.
Well, this is why I'm doing this show. I mean, I'm doing this show because of the fact that I really do care about the people out there.
Mm-hmm.
I care. I really care. And I want to touch hearts, and I want to give what I can give.
Well, it's so important, and definitely very much appreciated.
Well, let's put it this way. I didn't rack up a lot of jewels in my life, but the little bit of knowledge I have is the only thing I can give away. And being Native American, I do believe that that is my obligation to share.
Mm-hmm.
And to pass along.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. It may not be all accurate, but I do my best.
Well, it's very important. It's very important. And a lot of the issues people just haven't thought of.
No, no. And some of our communities around here in the Eastern Townships are too clannish. It's good to be clannish in the sense that we work in family groups, but it's not good to be clannish in the sense that we isolate others that have moved into our community.
No.
Because they have not lived here a certain time, were not born here, or do not belong. We have to make everybody feel they belong.
Mm-hmm.
And this must change. It really must.
It must, yeah.
Must. Well, I thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Well, I thank you, too. And definitely every show is a wealth of knowledge.